Funding for Capital Report is provided by the following. A grant from the law firm of Searcy, Denny, Scarola, Barnhart, and Shipley. Supporting public radio and taking time to care. On the web at searcylaw.com. Lewis, Longman, and Walker. A Florida law firm helping clients navigate the maze of regulatory and political processes. Offices in Tallahassee and statewide. More about Lewis, Longman, and Walker's legislative lobbying and other governmental affairs practices is at llw-law.com. The Florida Restaurant and Lodging Association, committed to protecting, educating, and promoting Florida's hospitality industry. Over 10,000 members providing 1.4 million jobs. The Florida Restaurant and Lodging Association. More at frla.org. And from Florida Wildlife Federation, a private nonprofit conservation organization working on behalf of Florida's fish, wildlife, and their habitats, as well as outdoor education and sustainable nature-based recreation. Florida Wildlife Federation, since 1936, fwfonline.org. WFSU-FM, Tallahassee. From the state capitol, Florida Public Radio brings you Capitol Report.
GOP state lawmakers are pushing forward a plan sending millions to an anti-abortion pregnancy support organization.
Bottom line, this bill is about providing more access, not less.
Also tonight, while the national health care debate rages on, a Florida lawmaker advances a bill to keep health insurers from dropping prescription coverage without notice.
You think it's fair that they've sought out a contract that covers the drug that they need, and in the middle of it, the plan says, thanks but no thanks, we're not going to cover you anymore.
We'll also get updates on proposed budget cuts for state colleges and legislation that would do away with state permission for new nursing homes and hospice centers. I'm Tom Flanagan. It's day four of week five in the 2017 Florida lawmaking session. This is Capitol Report. The Florida House is forging ahead with a measure funneling millions of dollars to a pregnancy support organization that opposes abortion. Nick Evans reports the move could sideline Planned Parenthood.
Florida's health department relies on contracts with third-party organizations to provide various services.
Well, in our area, in southwest and central Florida, we see about almost 5,000 patients a year for new patient visits and about 6,500 for ongoing patients.
That's Barbara Dravecki, a regional Planned Parenthood CEO, speaking last year on the steps of the federal courthouse in Tallahassee. Her organization has had a target on its back in recent years, as GOP-controlled state legislatures have taken steps to undermine the group. And she's at the courthouse to contest one of those measures, canceling long-standing contracts to provide non-abortion services. The judge's ruling largely dismantled the law and cleared the way to renew the contracts. Now the state legislature is trying a different tack.
Bottom line, this bill is about providing more access, not less. It's about providing more services, not less. And it's about providing more choices, not less.
Tampa Republican Representative Jackie Toledo is a mother of five, and her measure looks to the Florida Pregnancy Care Network to deliver those benefits. Providers in the network offer pregnancy testing and connect pregnant women with various services, including medical referrals. What they don't do is refer women to abortion providers, and Democrats raise a number of concerns. Lantana Representative Lori Berman argues it duplicates an existing program.
There is $60 million annually allocated to the Healthy Start program. And the Healthy Start program counsels women both before, during, and after pregnancy. The main difference between that program and this program is that this program promotes an anti-choice message.
Democrat Amy Mercado of Orlando questions sending state dollars to an organization offering referrals rather than health care.
Why have and fund facilities that offer no credible medical services to women who need medically accurate information and service?
An Aventura Democrat, Joe Geller, sees the organization as pursuing a religious agenda, even if the bill blocks providers from discussing religion.
Unfortunately, I continue to be troubled by the fact that I view this as potentially providing state support for what are really religious-based activities.
Toledo's measure doesn't prohibit contracting with Planned Parenthood. It just directs state health officials to set up agreements with the Florida Pregnancy Care Network going forward. And the House and Senate budget set aside $4 million to support the initiative. To this point, lawmakers have doled out money for the organization on a pay-as-you-go basis. The proposal sets up the kind of ongoing financial obligation House Speaker Richard Corcoran has railed against. The House approved the measure largely along party lines. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Nick Evans.
A Vero Beach Republican is winning the hearts of patient advocates, as well as the ire of some powerful opponents, with a bill that would ban health insurance companies from dropping prescription drug coverage without notice. Jim Ash has that story.
By now, most people have heard about EpiPen. Manufacturer Mylan raised the price more than 500% over recent years to $600 for a two-pack, even though thousands depend on it to treat life-threatening allergic reactions. Senator Debbie Mayfield thinks she has an answer. Her bill would ban HMOs and insurance companies from dropping prescription coverage before the annual contract runs out. Here's how she described it to the Senate Appropriations Committee.
When you enter into a contract with your health plan to cover pharmacy benefits, then they have to keep those benefits available to you during that 12-month contract period, because that's a contract that you entered into.
Mayfield says at least under her bill, patients would have time to hunt down generic equivalents or know how to contract with an insurance company that covers the medicine they need. Despite support from the American Cancer Society, AIDS organizations, and other consumer groups, the bill drew opposition from Associated Industries of Florida. Chief lobbyist Brewster Beavis complained it could lead insurers holding the bag when drug costs skyrocket. In the end, Beavis said, businesses would have to pay more for insurance.
By freezing that formulary and not allowing them to do that, you could see an increased cost for health insurance premiums on Florida businesses. So we do respectfully ask you to oppose this piece of legislation.
But that drew sharp words from Fort Myers Republican Lizbeth Beniquisto.
Do you think it's fair that they've sought out a contract that covers the drug that they need, and in the middle of it, the plan says, thanks, but no thanks. We're not going to cover you anymore, even though we said when you signed the contract that this drug was covered and you'd have access to it?
Beavis was forced to admit that the bill sponsors have a point.
I think that is an unfortunate circumstance that could potentially happen. And obviously, I mean, I'm a father of children. I don't want anything like that to happen to my children or my parents. And that is, you know, a potential potential issue that could come about.
AIF remains opposed, but Mayfield's bill passed the committee 18-0 and is headed to the Senate floor. A House companion won unanimous approval in its first stop, but the clock is ticking on the 2017 session, and it has two more committee hearings to go. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Jim Ash.
Still to come on Capitol Report, the BP oil payout is the largest civil settlement of its kind in U.S. history. Florida lawmakers have slightly different views on how the state's money should be doled out, but they're closing in on a compromise.
You know, I'm sure there's some magic words that can be crafted that would help, you know, that would help resolve that. We haven't quite gotten there yet.
A key House committee okays a bill that brings applause from nursing homes and hospice centers.
Whether your political persuasions lead you to revere the Gipper or No Drama Obama, I implore you to take the first step in bringing real market forces to bear in the healthcare arena.
And while lawmakers are considering a measure to prevent greyhound tracks from giving their racing dogs testosterone, industry officials argue it's needed to keep their female dogs from going into heat.
Support for Capitol Report is provided by the Able Trust, dedicated to connecting businesses and workers with disabilities. Businesses are encouraged to recruit, interview, and hire talented and loyal Floridians with disabilities as they seek to broaden their customer base and reach all of Florida's diverse population. Abletrust.org.
Almost 7 years after the Deepwater Horizon oil spill, Florida lawmakers are finalizing a settlement plan. There's still some distance between the House and Senate versions, but top lawmakers say a compromise is on the way. Kate Payne reports.
Pensacola Republican Representative Clay Ingram says it's hard to overstate the impact of the BP oil spill.
But the oil spill is one of the most significant issues we've had happen in this state, maybe ever, one of the most tragic. And so,
for months, Dofuniak Springs Republican Representative Brad Drake watched as millions of gallons of crude oil flowed into the Gulf of Mexico.
This saga would continue to play out for 87 long, fearful, treacherous days for all of us that live and make their living and raise their families in the Florida Panhandle.
The resulting settlement is a huge opportunity for the state to revitalize Florida's Gulf Coast. It's a pretty rural area with deep ties to the ocean and the work that comes with it. Lawmakers want to focus that redevelopment in the eight counties that are most affected: Bay, Escambia, Franklin, Gulf, Okaloosa, Santa Rosa, Wakulla, and Walton.
We are ensuring that 75% of all funds garnered by the Attorney General in this settlement go to the Florida Panhandle.
That's Panama City Republican Representative Jay Trumbull, who chairs the House committee steering the process.
Ensuring that every single person within the eight counties are able to see their schools becoming better equipped, their neighborhoods becoming safer, taxes being lowered, and high-wage jobs being created.
The state has created a group called Triumph Gulf Coast that will invest the money and choose which projects to fund. House and Senate lawmakers generally agree on what the money should go towards. Public infrastructure, education, and workforce development top the list. But Trumbull says there's still some disagreement on how much goes where.
Rather than 4%, 6% of the money over the lifetime of the projects or over the lifetime of the settlement will be spent in each county. So that ensures that some of these smaller counties will receive, you know, a significant amount of the settlement dollars.
But the Senate version allocates no less than 5% to each county. A small difference, but one that has some in the least populated counties worried they'll miss out on projects. On the flip side, Clearwater Republican Senator Jack Latvala says his chamber wants more input from local governments.
Some senators, certainly county commissioners, that would like some local government involvement in the decision-making process of how the money gets spent in their counties. And, you know, I'm sure there's some magic words that can be crafted that would help, you know, that would help resolve that. But we haven't quite gotten there yet.
There are issues this year that have House and Senate lawmakers so starkly divided, a special session feels almost inevitable. But Latvala says this is not one of them.
It's largely a worked out product with the legislators that are involved.
The Senate version is now ready for a floor vote. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Kate Payne.
Nursing homes and hospice centers scored a key victory today. A House Health Committee has approved a bill that would remove regulations on where certain health care facilities, excluding nursing homes and hospice centers, can be built. Lynn Hatter reports.
It's part of a years-long effort to overhaul what's called Certificate of Need. Those are the rules that govern where and when healthcare facilities can be built. The issue goes back decades, literally. Sal Nuzzo with the libertarian-leaning James Madison Institute says Presidents Ronald Reagan and Barack Obama agreed on one thing: a reduction in Certificate of Need rules.
Now, in 1986, Ronald Reagan issued via the Federal Trade Commission an exhaustive study of the impact of CON laws. The report found that while they were intended to reduce costs, improve quality, and increase access to care, they in fact did the exact opposite. Fast forward, if you don't like Ronald Reagan, fast forward 30 years to President Barack Obama, who issued via the Federal Trade Commission and signed on by the Department of Justice a statement articulating that while intended to reduce costs, improve quality, and access to care, CON laws in reality did the exact opposite. So regardless of whether your political persuasions lead you to revere the Gipper or No Drama Obama, I implore you to take the first step in bringing real market forces to bear in the healthcare arena.
Two different presidents, two different eras, same conclusion. Florida is among more than 30 states that still have Certificate of Need laws on the books. That's according to the National Conference of State Legislatures. The original proposal before the House would have removed those rules for nursing homes, hospice centers, and hospitals. But Sarasota Republican Representative Alex Miller amended her House Bill 7 Thursday to remove the limits only for hospitals, leaving them in place for nursing homes and hospice centers.
Nursing homes are now excluded as well as hospice. So this is now just, yes, sorry.
The Florida Healthcare Association represents nursing homes and hospice. It pushed for the exemption. The organization argues creating more nursing and hospice centers in places they aren't needed results in an overall drop in occupancy, which could end up costing the state more money than it would save. Furthermore, the state overhauled Certificate of Need laws in 2014 for nursing homes, and the FHCA says since then more than 30 new facilities facilities have been built. Health Committee Chairman Travis Cummings tried to needle a support statement from the FHCA.
Bob Estalos from the Florida Healthcare Association.
Florida Healthcare Association. This was actually on the amendment. We waive in support.
Okay, thank you. How about the bill, too? Can we get that?
Love the amendment.
Okay, thank
As it stands now, only hospitals would be exempt from Certificate of Need. That's supported by Governor Rick Scott. However, the issue could be dead in the water. A Senate companion bill has not gotten any hearings so far. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Lynn Hatter.
Legislators and community college presidents are pleading with leaders in the Florida House and Senate to spare community colleges from budget cuts. The House and Senate have very different budget proposals, but as Sarah Mueller tells us, college presidents insist they don't like either one.
Tallahassee Community College student Jasmine Green plans to transfer to Florida State University soon. Green is able to get her degree in criminology without a lot of student loan debt because she started at a community college.
My story, you know, not thinking that I can be successful or I could, you know, stand here in front of you guys and thinking that, oh, because I don't have the test scores, I don't have the SAT scores, I'm not able to get into a university.
West Park Democratic Representative Chevron Jones says the Florida college system is a leader in helping students of color graduate from college. He says it also helps military veterans and older students earn degrees and get job training.
11 Florida college system institutions have been placed in the top 100 colleges nationwide for the number of associate degrees awarded to minority students. And as I stand here today as one of the ranking members on the Education Committee and as a member on the Appropriations Committee, it bothers me in the direction that we are moving in the cuts.
The Florida college system is made up of 28 member colleges. The Senate is increasing university funding while reducing community college funding by cutting $55 million in developmental education classes. Senate President Joe Negron gives universities an extra $312 million. Negron says he wants Florida to have universities that draw top students and faculty.
We want our universities to be absolute destination universities, to be elite, to be universities that are in the category of the University of Virginia, the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill, University of Michigan. That's an aspirational goal that I think is achievable over time.
Negron says community colleges should refocus on awarding two-year degrees, and he wants to curb their expansion of four-year programs. But Senator Gary Farmer says he thinks the Senate's proposal is more unfair than the House version, which cuts both colleges and universities. The House is considering cutting more than $63 million from colleges. It also reduces foundation money to each college by $9.8 million annually starting next year. House lawmakers questioned college foundation spending during the committee meetings on higher education. Records released by the House Appropriations Committee show the University of Florida Foundation spent $61,000 on a trip to Paris last year. The Tallahassee Community College Foundation spent nearly $11,000 for in-state travel. Representative Carlos Trujillo says the House cut colleges and universities that were using operational money to pay for foundation staff.
So across the system, it's about $80 million. If you look in my presentation, you can find the answers. It'll tell you each college and each university how much they were paying per foundation staff.
Cynthia Bioto is president of Florida State College at Jacksonville. She says the foundations are used to match state funding with private donations.
And our foundations provide 75% of what donors give goes directly to student scholarships. These kinds of budget reductions will compromise not only access, but need-based aid.
The House and Senate will present their respective spending plans on the chamber floors next week. Negotiating a final proposal will start later this month. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Sarah Mueller.
Two bills offering a formal apology to former wards who say they were abused in a panhandle school and also creates memorials for those buried on the property passed their first House committee today. As Sasha Cordner reports, after hearing some horrific stories, some Florida lawmakers issued apologies of their own.
Over the past decade, many men former juvenile delinquents of the Dozier School for Boys in Marianna have come forward. That includes Jerry Cooper, who says he remembers receiving a severe beating when he was 16.
I got over 100 lashes with a strap from the small of my back to the breaks of my knees. I passed out. What woke me up is I started choking on my blood because my mouth was torn to pieces. I had a broken foot, and I had severe, severe lacerations.
There's also Robert Straley, who spent 11 months at Dozier. In addition to beatings, he says he was sexually abused at age 13.
I was taken down twice in the middle of the night by just waking me up. And this was Troy Tidwell, who said, come with me, and took me in there and told me I was smoking, and if I denied it, he was going to take me down. Well, down I went. And then the last thing that they did was they took me to an underground room and raped me and molested me. And I don't know why, specifically why they picked on me like that, but a lot of that happened to a lot of the men there.
And the abuse claims also surrounded Dozier's second campus in Okeechobee. Like Marianna's, it closed in 2011. Terry Levins went to the Okeechobee Boys School in 1963.
And it was bad, really bad. But I survived it. And I know both schools were bad. I don't care what school you was in, Dozier or Okeechobee, a beating is a beating. We all went through a lot of pain.
Their stories touch House Judiciary Committee members Thursday so much that some cried as they issued an apology.
Mr. Straley, Mr. Cooper, and all the men who couldn't be with us today, we're so sorry. We're so sorry.
And I will also echo what my chairman has said, and give me a moment, because I'm still feeling it. We apologize.
There are no words that we can offer. We are sorry.
That was Committee Chair Chris Sprouse, the panel's head, Democrat Cynthia Stafford, and Vice Chair Ross Spano. Others, like Delray Beach Republican Bill Hager, took up a call by House Speaker Richard Corcoran to pursue the staffers in question who are still alive today.
You know, at the end of World War II, there was a Nazi hunter, and he pursued Nazis all over the face of the earth. It seems to me that one of the things that ought rightfully be considered here is that we ought to pursue these Marianna abusers. We ought to pursue them in a criminal way, consistent with justice, consistent with due process.
For now, the panel passed a House resolution by Jacksonville Democrat Tracy Davis to acknowledge the abuses under the state supervision at both Dozier campuses and issue a formal apology via the legislature.
And an affirmation of our commitment to ensure that these senseless acts of violence against our children, which are now men, will never occur in a state-operated facility again.
The House committee also passed a measure that goes further. Among its provisions is a final decision not to sell the Dozier property. The issue had turned controversial as the state had initially tried to sell the land, while others wanted to continue the search for other bodies of boys who died from the alleged abuse and are still believed to be buried on the grounds. In recent years, researchers recovered the remains of 55. Tampa Republican Representative Sean Harrison is one of the bill's main sponsors.
No one other than the state of Florida will ever own this property. The state of Florida did this to you, and we will always keep it.
In addition to setting up memorials in Marianna and Tallahassee, the bill also allows for the state to come up with a plan to search for more bodies on the property. It's expected to cost $1.2 million. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Sasha Kortner.
You're listening to Capitol Report from Florida Public Radio. I'm Tom Flanagan. Finally tonight, a bill to prevent greyhound tracks from giving their racing dogs steroids is moving forward in the Senate. Regan McCarthy has more.
Members of the greyhound industry say without the ability to use anabolic steroids like testosterone to keep their female dogs from going into heat, a catastrophe could be just around the corner.
If there's a fight with males trying to get over here to get to these females, that you have 30 of them outside and 30 males, it's disastrous. I wouldn't be able to stop them. Nobody in here could stop them.
That's Fred Johnson with the Florida Greyhound Association of Jacksonville. He says he's been in the business since 1978 and says the public's understanding about steroid use in greyhounds is way off base. They're not shooting the dogs up with needles, he says. Instead, the dogs are given chewable steroid tablets twice a month. And Jack Corey, who represents the Florida Greyhound Association, says he doesn't see why anyone would want to stop dog owners from using the drug.
Birth control is birth control, whether it's in a dog or a human being. And birth control methods have been used for a long time in this country, legally, honestly, and morally.
But animal rights activists like Kate McFaul with the Humane Society of the United States say giving female racing greyhounds a steroid twice a month for years at a time can have long-term negative effects for the dogs.
For the female dogs, it gives them male parts over time. I mean, that's sort of what happens. And it's bad for their health. It's bad for other parts of their body as well. But over time, not all, but many of them have this problem.
And Carrie Teal with the animal rights group Grey2K says in other countries where greyhound racing is more popular, participants have long stopped using drugs to keep their female dogs from going into heat.
The female dogs are segmented. They're separated from the males if they come into heat for the period of time they're in heat, and then they're allowed to race. It's not complicated.
Former Lieutenant Governor Jeff Kottkamp, who also represents the greyhound racing industry, says owners wouldn't do anything to harm their dogs.
Frankly, nobody cares more about these animals than their owners.
But Teal says that statement raises questions for him.
Over the last 7 years, I've heard repeatedly the Florida Greyhound Association say that they love their dogs, but every time we bring proposals to reform this industry, they're against them. We bring a proposal to require that injuries be reported. They're against it. We bring a proposal to require that anabolic steroids be prohibited. They're against it.
The measure passed out of the Senate Regulated Industries Committee Thursday. A similar measure is awaiting a hearing on the House floor. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Regan McCarthy.
Our regular Capitol Report correspondents are Jim Ash, Sasha Cordner, Nick Evans, Lynn Hatter, Regan McCarthy, Sarah Mueller, and Kate Payne. We also thank our contributing Florida Public Radio stations. Technical assistance for Capitol Report is provided by Taylor Cox, and I'm Tom Flanagan. Follow us on Twitter at FPR Cap Report, and join us each weeknight at this time throughout the 2017 Florida lawmaking session for more reports from the state capitol.
Audio copies of Capitol Report are available by calling 1-800-829-8809. You can also hear Capitol Report online, including archives of past shows at fprn.org. Funding for Capitol Report is provided by the following: a grant from the law firm of Searcy, Denny, Scarola, Barnhart, and Shipley, supporting public radio and taking time to care. On the web at searcylaw.com. Lewis, Longman, and Walker, a Florida law firm helping clients navigate the maze of regulatory and political processes. Offices in Tallahassee and statewide. More about Lewis, Longman, and Walker's legislative lobbying and other governmental affairs practices is at llw-law.com. The Florida Restaurant and Lodging Association, committed to protecting, educating, and promoting Florida's hospitality industry. Over 10,000 members providing 1.4 million jobs. The Florida Restaurant and Lodging Association. More at frla.org. And from the Florida Wildlife Federation, supporting acquisition, protection, and stewardship of public and private conservation lands to protect Florida's waters, and to Everglades Restoration and Fish and Wildlife Conservation, the Florida Wildlife Federation, fwfonline.org. WFSU-FM, Tallahassee. This is Florida Public Radio.